This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann at Otago Polytechnic, and I am joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Sam, how's it going?
Very well indeed. You told us last week about the sourdough company that you've set up.
I'm trying not to think of it like that because you know me by now, and our listeners will too. As soon as it becomes a job, something I have to do, I don't want to do it anymore. So yes, I will sell the sourdough to the store, but I will only take it in if I feel like it, which is every day.
Until they phone up and say, "Where's our sourdough?"
And that will be it. I'll be done with sourdough forever. I'll never do it again.
I suppose you could argue that that's a sustainable approach.
Oh, indeed it is. But I only like making three different types of sourdough. So a plain one and a chocolate one and a blueberry sourdough. And so if anybody wants anything outside of that, well, they're tough.
Hang on, you're adding the chocolate to it. You haven't managed to breed a chocolate yeast.
Oh, wish I could. Oh my gosh, we're talking about chocolate today too. So this is going to be great. That was, totally by accident. But yes, wouldn't it be great if I could some way of making my own.
We are coming up for air. Who are we introducing today?
Today it is my great pleasure to introduce the very wonderful Tia Gregerson. Tia is a wonderful thinker, and I thoroughly enjoyed her interview. And Tia, it's a real pleasure to have you with us today. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Maru and Sam. I'm glad to be here.
Kia ora, Tia. Where did you grow up, Tia?
I grew up in Denmark. Yeah.
What was that like?
That was really nice. I grew up outside of Copenhagen, so kind of in a small town, but I have lived and gone to high school and university in Copenhagen, so I've lived both outside and inside a big city, which was pretty cool.
And what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, see, that's always the big question, isn't it? Whenever people have asked me when I was a child, I actually always had one specific answer, and that was to be a millionaire. I'm not really sure how I'm going to do that, but that's definitely a good goal to have. Now it's probably being a little bit more realistic. It will probably be a sustainability consultant within like the Danish businesses or any type of businesses that works with a range of products, I would say.
I wonder if there are any millionaire sustainability consultants.
See, that's going to be the new goal, isn't it? There ain't going to be one until there suddenly is one.
Exactly. So, on your plan to become a millionaire, because the sustainability consultant is reasonably recent with your enrolling in a Masters of Sustainable Business, what have you done before that?
Before that, I did my undergraduate at the Copenhagen Business School, which was in Business Administrations and Economics. And after that one, I worked part-time as a marketing assistant before doing full-time as an accounting consultant. And I did that for just about a year before coming here.
So what made you decide to go down a sustainability route?
I think it's just the increasing focus there is on sustainability and recycling especially. And it just, whenever I was at home and I went for a walk, even though I lived in this beautiful part of Copenhagen, it wasn't that far from this small industrial area. And whenever I walked there, I would just see so much garbage and shit, sorry to say it, on the roads and like right on their properties or right beside their properties, which no one would really have responsibility for to actually remove that stuff. It wouldn't really be the state that would go in and remove this because it's still on private property, but they wouldn't do anything about it. And then it would just blow straight into our lovely harbor. And that just made me sad and angry. So that's actually why I chose the sustainability focus.
It's always interesting looking at what has inspired people and actually taking the career life-affirming or something life-defining decision to go down that sustainability route. So for you, it's mixing the business that you're already doing and what, a passion for or wanting to do something about the degradation, yeah, the damage in that area?
Yeah, so for example, as an accounting consultant, I worked with different types of companies and I saw some of their struggles with recycling. Mostly because, for example, as a private person who lived in Copenhagen, we had to recycle, I think it's 14 different things, but companies were only supposed to recycle 3 or 4 maybe. And that just made me really angry as a person, because it was like, why do I need to sort soft plastic, hard plastic, glass, metal, electronics, batteries, food, all of this when companies don't? So what I want to do with mine is finding a way to actually help businesses do it without regulations, but also finding a way to actually help regulations come into place to make sure that it's not just private people or individuals who would have to do all these recycling matters or sustainability practices in general, but actually everyone is participating in it.
I would have thought that Denmark was a progressive place that could see the value in system change and not just offloading all the responsibility onto individuals. Why have they gone down the individual responsibility route? I was going to say before, because I don't know if it's before, but the way you describe it, instead of the business, the sustainable systems approach?
Well, I think it might be just the politicians not really agreeing on anything at the moment. I think it might also be because there is so many rules and regulations in Denmark already that are already harsher or more, like where you have to do more compared to the general laws in the EU. And I think that if the state wants to, or the government wants to put more regulations onto businesses, it might suddenly become too much and people can't keep up. So they would rather kind of incentivize people to do it on their own instead, which is just not really working, if I had to be honest.
Let's take your music choice. Let's see who we've got. Who's here? Too Sweet. Why this one?
Well, of course, because I interviewed a chocolate manufacturer, so sweet chocolate is always a good thing, but it's not too sweet, so I find that a little bit ironic.
Take my whiskey, my coffee black, and my bed at mythical sprite of the forest of Orokinui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi aroha nui ki a koutou ko tahua hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars, in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are, and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day, who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough. We've had to experience something I don't think any of us could ever have imagined, this global pandemic. And I know for all of us, it has changed us, inevitably. In many ways, it has allowed us to see things more clearly, to see our priorities more clearly in life. And I hope to find acceptance with others' priorities. They may not be the same as ours, but we can only boundary ourselves. We can only really direct ourselves in this life. For me, I am grateful that I am now a free woman and I'm spending time with my family. This is a wonderful thing for me. And that having been in a relationship for 10 years and now just a friendship, I am set free into this world as I am now. And of course, for all of us, when we reacquaint ourselves with our inner nature, having spent perhaps some time away or some time less capable of communing with this inner knowing that we all possess, it's a wonderful homecoming. It's a wonderful sense of relief to be back in that space of understanding with ourselves. And I'm just reveling in it at the moment. I really am. Every day I go and I put my feet in the sea and I go home and I rest and I take that time for myself, and it's just such a pleasure. I feel very grateful and I feel very lucky to be able to do this. It's always been my ambition to have multiple offspring, and I'm hoping that that will come to fruition. Even one offspring would be a great blessing, but we shall see what unfolds. I'm fortunate to work with children, and I love them, and I remember them all, and I love seeing them as they grow over the years and visit me at Orokinui Eco Sanctuary. And of course, I'm very privileged to work with our young, beautiful manu and moko moko and tipu, all of these beautiful birds and reptiles and plants, and I see them growing too. I feel so fortunate. And of course, when we are confronted with our own mortality, our own aging, our own decrepitude, it is a great comfort to see that life continues, that the Māori, that the life force is carried on. And when we do transition to that other realm, our body, of course, returns to the earth and is transformed into new consciousness, new life, and this is a comfort to me also. I've been really enjoying staying with my whānau in Portobello, being so close to the sea, so close to the volcanic iron and all the cliff faces that makes them a beautiful, rich ochre. And as I speak to you now, I'm driving towards the boat ramp where I'll walk down into the sea with you. I do this every day. This really helps me to recalibrate and ground. So I really hope for you, whatever's happening in your world, whatever changes and new ways of doing, being, seeing, feeling you're moving through, you're finding ways each day to reconnect with yourself, to come back into communion with your inner knowing and allowing your personal inner guidance system to give you comfort and succor as you make your way forward. It's a huge pleasure and privilege, of course, to be part of this show. So a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blown Bubbles team for having me. And I'll talk with you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
Tia, we're super excited to hear your podcast that you made. Who did you interview in it, and what in particular would you like the listeners to listen out for?
So I interviewed Fiona from Kakawa Confectionery, and it was actually a really interesting conversation about her idea of making this bean-to-bar chocolate plate, but also what kind of struggles she would have and her relations with her suppliers. So I would just say, be open to the idea of buying bean-to-bar chocolate more often than buying some of the bigger mass-produced chocolate bars instead.
Kia ora, everyone. My name is Tia, and with me we have Fiona from Kakawa Confectionery. We're going to talk a little bit about how Fiona is structuring her bean-to-bar chocolate plate and what benefits there are in buying her bean-to-bar chocolate.
Kia ora. Ko takitimu te mauka, ko aparima te awa, ko te arakiwa te moana, ko takitimu, rawa ko urua, rawa ko waora, rawa ko waola, rawa ko Lady Igadea, rawa ko mermaid oku waka, ko waitaha ka te mamoe kaitahu oku iwi, ko Clan Gordonahoe, ko takatau te titi, rawa ko taumutu oku marae, no otipoti tuku kainga, ko Paul tuku matua, ko Glenis tuku whaia, ko Priestess Zila tuku hoa kuri. Or Fiona Tokuikoa, kia ora koutou. So yeah, kia ora, my name's Fiona. My whakapapa to Waitaha ka te mamoe kaitahu is my iwi, and I'm also Scottish, Irish, and a little bit Dutch as well. So I just find that it's nice to know where we're from so that we can honour our whakapapa and create a bit of connection in that space. Yeah, so thank you.
So, of course, we're going to talk a bit about your company, Kakawa Confectionery. And can you just start telling me about how you got the idea for Kakawa?
So, Kakawa actually means to allow time and space to reignite the inner fire. And the reason that was created, because that's what cacao has done for me personally. It's changed my life when it comes to health and wellness. And so that being able to share that with other people has been integral to the process of creating Kakawa. I used to have endometriosis, anxiety, depression, and I also used to not be able to feel joy in my body until cacao has become part of my life. Those things have all shifted and enabled me to live a more thriving physical, mental, emotional body, you know, be in that body and be able to participate and build in a much easier and nicer way.
When you get, usually when you're an entrepreneur and you start your own company, you really want to put your own fingerprint, or what you want to call it, on your products. Was that how it helped you get out of these situations?
Well, I started drinking my supply chain's cacao through friends of mine who create cacao in the Rongawa that they were creating. So the Cacao Ambassador and Chilita Zaini and Mama Muti create some other blends, which have rongoā Māori in them. And so through using those before I started creating my own, that's really what shifted, most especially the endometriosis. And that really changed my life, not having to cope with such intense pain and vomiting and the diarrhea and the other things that come with that menstrual process for me, which, you know, I'd spent 24 years dealing with that on a monthly basis. So now it's so much more easeful. So, and then I just got really deep into cacao and then really wanted to create my own Māori rich version of that will be able to help other people. So putting my own kind of spin on that. And, you know, like I've got, there's so much more development still to come. You know, I'm still in the early stages of creating this brand and the products that we create.
Yeah, when did you start the company? That was only a couple of years ago, right?
Actually, next month, we're celebrating 1 year of Kakawa as a brand, but I've actually been making since the end of 2022, start of 23. So it's been just over 18 months, I guess, yeah.
So it's still very new.
Yeah, it's still very new, but it's also needed and wanted. Like I just, my customers are just so enamored with my product. It's been incredible.
And we met on the museum lawn the other day, and I still have my my cacao, and it's really good. I really like it. Definitely different from the more traditional chocolate plates that I usually buy. Usually that's Whitaker's or some European that I've bought before. Like, you can really taste how fine the chocolate is, which is really, really nice because I'm a big chocolate person, so I find it really nice.
Yeah, and what's actually different about my chocolate is it's still untempered. Like, I'm not actually tempering the chocolate at all. And to me, that what that does is it creates a more open source flavor, and the flavor will also develop over time. Whereas what you'll find on most supermarket shelves is it's more mass produced, and they also have a lot more filler in them than what mine is. Very pure. It only has three ingredients, or four or five, depending on what else I've chosen to put with it. Yeah, so it's really pure, and it's actually, it's more of a, I would term it as a rongoā or a medicine, because it's so pure. You're actually getting all those health benefits, even when you're eating the chocolate, because it's dark chocolate as well. Like, I only make dark chocolate for that reason. I'm not interested in making chocolate that is going to be unhealthy. The medicinal properties that it actually has, it has lots of iron, magnesium, zinc, calcium, polyphenols, antioxidants, anandamides. It works on your, it has the bliss molecule on it, so it actually works on your serotonin and dopamine levels. It's anti-inflammatory. It works on your cardiovascular system, so it's really good for heart health. And it also has tryptophan and tryptamine in it, which is the stimulant, which gives you a lot more energy. So coffee gives you a short, sharp energy boost, whereas cacao will give you a long, sustained energy. So that will through the day. Cacao actually originated from Mesoamerica. They used to give it to their warriors before they went out to fight, to get them pumped up, and used to mix it with a whole bunch of other psychedelic mushroom, other things to get them in a good space to do that. So, you know, it's such a beautiful product. And yeah, that's why it's changed. It's why it's given, you know, given me fuel to be in the world these days.
It's amazing because, like, I've always loved chocolate. Chocolate is definitely my go-to type of candy. It's good to know that it's a superfood and that it has all of these amazing health things too. I know that a lot of the mass productions, of course, they put in a bunch of sugar and a bunch of different things that will not actually help on the health benefits, but I feel a little bit better now about eating my chocolate.
Yeah, so if you're getting good bean to bar dark chocolate, then that's the way to go. You're supporting yourself, and you're supporting a good supply chain, then that's, you know, it's really important. And like, that is how consumers can support us. You know, like, if you're wanting to support yourself emotionally, physically, mentally, then that's the way to do it. It's to have a really good bean to bar chocolate or cacao. And we have about 30 makers in New Zealand who are doing bean to bar. And that's beautiful. That's incredible that we've got such amazing producers here in New Zealand. They're just in that small country. And a lot of them are using Pacific cacao, which would be great.
We talked about the article that you sent from the spin-off, which talked about this guy who, what was his name? I remember his name.
From Weave Cacao. He also owns Raglan, the Raglan Chocolate Company. Oh, gosh, I can't remember either. I met him recently.
Mike Renfrey, yeah, he was working, and then he started looking at the supply chain of chocolate, and then he started his own bean-to-bar chocolate. So that's also like you doing a bean-to-bar chocolate. What inspired you actually to do this type of chocolate instead of just doing a mini version of a mass-scale chocolate thing?
Well, there is no other way to make chocolate if you're handcrafting it and you're doing it yourself. Personally, I guess it's health reasons and honouring the whakapapa of the cacao, but also honouring the fact that we need to eat healthier food. Like, a lot of the stuff on our supermarket shelves isn't good for us. And I've had multiple health problems throughout my life, having a rare hereditary nerve condition, and as I've mentioned, endometriosis, anxiety, depression. Like, eating bad food exacerbates those things. And so for me, it's really about having good quality kai, organic food, good quality water, you know, so that you're really nourishing yourself. That's kind of the values that uphold what I'm doing. And to me, it's really important to have high quality food that really nourishes us as people. We're not going to heal ourselves if we continue to eat the way that we are. Mm. So to me, food is medicine, and that's why I call it rongoā medicine, because that is so much more important. You know, what we're feeding ourselves is medicinal. It doesn't matter whether it's a piece of lettuce or a bit of spinach or, you know, a potato or a kumara. Like, they all actually have health properties to them that are good for us, you know, whether it's fruit or whatever. You know, there's nutrients and essential vitamins and minerals in everything we eat. So yeah. And that's why I love cacao, because it's so packed full of all of those things. And also as wahine, as women, we all, like, I've only even met a couple of women who don't like chocolate because they're allergic to it, but every other woman I know is just, you know, like, it's their go-to. It's the thing that they want to have as part of their probably daily eating habits. They're devoted to, and it's never going to not be part of their life. Yeah. So getting good quality food in there is, yeah, really important. So having good quality dark chocolate.
It's also funny, like, whenever, as a woman, of course, when you have your that time of the month, the go-to is always chocolate. Everyone always wants chocolate because we know that in that week is just, we want something to balance our hormones, I think, also. And I'm pretty sure that chocolate also helps with that.
Absolutely. It really does. It's because it's got all the iron, the magnesium, the zinc, the calcium, the things that your body is really craving. And that's why we crave chocolate, because we want those things. Our body's needing those things. So, I mean, there's a reason why we crave chocolate, because we actually need the input of that stuff into our body. So
you had a couple of different flavors. I think I bought the normal 70%. But what other flavors did you have?
So I do a 70%. I do a 70% with Celtic and New Zealand sea salt with kelp. That's a bit of a nod to my Celtic and New Zealand whakapapa. Then I do an 80% as well. They're all with Trade Aid cane sugar. And then I have an 85% with coconut sugar. And then I do a couple of limited edition ones. At the moment, I have a Mahikai bar that has walnuts, raspberries, and black currants from my mum's garden. Very limited edition, because I only have a limited amount of those things from her garden. But I've got lots of ideas for products, more products that I want to make. And then I also make the 100% cacao. So I've got a plain cacao, and then I've got a kawakawa cacao as well. So I'm starting to build on and create more rangoa Māori options when it comes to cacao. And I know that will also probably end up going into chocolate. But yeah, it's right now I'm in this point where I'm needing to just kind of keep up with the regular things and not add too many things all at once, because I need to get into a really stable position just when it comes to the supply chain and processing, and before I can really expand too much. I have far too many ideas around flavors and not enough time to realize them.
I just want to go back a little bit to some of the processes that you have in getting the chocolate from the cacao bean to the finished products. So of course, I'm studying Master of Sustainable Business, so I'm focusing on the sustainability aspect of your whole process here. So can you tell me a little bit how you said you had multiple supply chains from the Pacific Islands and how they treated? How do you make sure that these people are actually doing most of their stuff sustainable?
Well, I have to trust my supply chain at the moment, and that is the cacao ambassador, that they're working on the ground to do that work with them. And I know that that is happening because Una goes there on a regular basis. So she goes to the islands on a regular basis. And like, I'm actually going to the Solomon Islands in December to see for myself exactly how that process is happening. Because without that connection, how will I actually 100% know that that's what I'm being told is what's happening? Yeah, at the moment, it's trusting my supply chain, but also having lots of conversations with my suppliers.
And one of the other things I sent you was this review of the climate change impact on the cacao production in the Pacific Islands. How are you, and I know you just started, so of course you're still working your way through meeting your supply chain and all of this. Do you have any fears about how climate change is going to impact your cacao production or the farmers' productions?
I probably have more fears about how it's going to affect the people than I do the production itself. If it gets to the point where cacao can't be produced in the islands, then maybe I should be making it, you know, and that will just be another evolution of business into something else. And it's being capable of adaption and being aware of the things that are happening, so that we kind of attempt to keep one step ahead, but we probably won't, you know, we might need to be reactive to that, but I'd rather try and be preemptive and adaptive than else. But to me, it's more about the people. I you know, their livelihood is important. There will always be something for me to produce and something for me to create, or some way for me to participate, whether it's producing my own cacao or whether it's participating in the process of enabling or supporting another way.
Yeah, I mean, we probably can't reverse the process, but we can definitely slow down the whole climate change if we get everyone to start listening to all the scientists telling us about the climate change.
Well, we don't just have to listen to the scientists. We actually have to take concerted action ourselves. And a lot of that is actually doing things like boycotting the people who are doing the bad work, divesting, and that's money, divesting and boycotting. That's where money comes into it. And then sanctioning those people and holding them to account for the things that they're doing. The things that are happening globally right now are actually exacerbating climate change. You know, we've got war happening in multiple places, and it is creating more faster change, you know, because there's all of these chemicals being exposed into the land, into the air, into the people, you know, like, and that's what creates sickness. And so if we're not healthy people, you know, and that's why they keep doing it, so that we're stuck in that place and we can't get out of it. And that's why being able to resist and being really steadfast in your mana and like holding your wairua and like being very, very strong in your beliefs is so important these days. And being in community is probably the biggest aspect to that. But working together to build change and having conversations. Like, how else do we actually adapt if we're not into each other? We have this kind of individualistic, been taught that we're all individuals, and we are. We are all individuals, but we also are individuals in community. And that's actually probably one of the most important things, is that we need to be able to be a diverse community and adapt through being diverse community, because we're all allowed to be who we are, but we also need to be able to get along and not just be fighting all the time. And I think that's probably one of the hardest things, is that we've got to a point where we're just butting heads all the time and we can't even listen to each other and accept that you might have a different opinion than me, but we actually still need to eat food, have shelter, stay warm, you know, be healthy, you know, those fundamentals. And that's why I'm in business, because I want to be able to teach people and talk about that and have those kind of conversations. Why I've shifted from zero waste fashion into zero waste event management into cacao, because I realized that the businesses that I were in weren't being able to help me have those conversations in a way that was actually getting into people's psyche. Whereas, you know, I was doing the work for them. I wasn't actually supporting them to realize it for themselves. And so that's how, like, that to me, that's what cacao is doing. Through the way I imbue it with Māori and the way that it gets into the body, it's actually supporting people to awaken to those possibilities and understand that on a deeper basis, because we're having conversations about my supply chain, where things are coming from, how things are being affected. You know, like, people are actually interested and want to know those things. And so every other business I've ever had, we've never really been able to have such deep conversations, because they just see it as, oh, this is my waste, it's going in the bin, I don't care about it, you know. Whereas this, they actually are interested in a conversation about the whole thing. And that's what cacao is. The whole whakapapa is actually there and bent about.
I have one final question for you. What makes you feel positive about the future in sustainability, about your cacao, or it can just be in general, how you're going to make everything sustainable?
I think it's the community that's being built around cacao. I think there's lots of us that working towards change, and we opening hearts with the cacao and actually being able to have those conversations. So I think it's just building community.
So I think that was everything from my side. So if you have any last comments that you want to share with anyone.
I guess if you haven't tried cacao, come to one of my events. Come and find me at a market and have some cacao with me. Ask me questions that you want, you know, like, I'm open to, and, you know, go out and be with Papa Tuanuku and ground yourself, take your shoes off, you know, touch the grass, go to the beach, sit and listen.
It sounds like really good advice. Great. Well, thank you so much for participating.
You're welcome. Thank you. Ka kite.
Yeah, thank you. That was a really fascinating interview with Fiona. What was your big takeaway from it?
I think my biggest takeaway from it was to appreciate the chocolate a bit more, because I am a very, very big consumer of chocolate. I love it. It's probably the only thing I cannot live without.
And it's in every form. It's like chocolate cakes, chocolate milkshake, chocolate bars, everything. But to actually appreciate the chocolate a bit more is probably my key takeaway from it, because there's a lot of things that actually go into producing it, and especially if you want to be sustainable as well when you're doing it. So I think I will definitely appreciate my chocolate a lot more.
Is there anything about what you learned from doing the podcast that will inform your practice going forward and whatever your future looks like?
Well, obviously, I'm not buying as much mass-produced chocolate anymore, because I ended up buying one of Fiona's bean-to-bar chocolate. And even though I'm not really a big fan of dark chocolate, I got her 70% chocolate, and it was just so good. And you could really taste the fineness of it, and I was blown away by it. And afterwards, I've had some standard chocolate bars, and I've been so disappointed. But of course, besides that, there's also her passion in doing this sustainable chocolate, bean-to-bar chocolate bar. And it's just amazing seeing her passion and hearing her passion and, yeah, and all the kind of challenges you've had through the whole process.
When you think about the future, because you've made this commitment, haven't you? I mean, you've come to the other side of the world to engage in this amazing education journey, and so it's going to transform your life. And when you think about the future, and you think about the future of work, if you were creating a job for yourself right now for your future, what would it be?
Well, mostly because of my experience as an accountant consultant, I would probably go into being a sustainability consultant as well, and helping companies look at their annual reports and their carbon footprint calculations. I know that back in Denmark, a lot of the banks are actually helping people do this along with their accountants, because a lot of the accountants don't have this degree. We don't really have a business sustainability degree, at least not at Copenhagen Business School when I was there. So for me, I want to bring this sustainability knowledge back and really help them get that get that focus on the sustainability in the reports, and also helping them with compliance and regulatory requirements and stuff.
Is that is it something that you can see yourself teaching or working in a like a consulting practice, or can you see yourself being like in a university or some sort of education provider as a teacher?
I think it would start out with gaining the experience first, and actually go out and work as a consultant maybe for, I don't know, 10 or 20 years. And then I could probably, as a side job, mostly do some sustainability courses at a university. I could definitely see that happening.
One of the things that I've noticed about you from sharing that teaching space with you over this last semester has been that you've got a really beautiful way of explaining things in a way that people can engage with and understand. And it's not something that you see in everybody.
Oh, I'm really glad to hear that.
Fee talked about the passion, and you talked about recognizing that in her. Do you think it's possible to, and her thing is chocolate, right? It's easy to be passionate about chocolate. Do you think it would be as easy to be passionate about sustainability in something which is not so chocolatey?
I mean, for example, as an accounting consultant, I work with several different types of businesses. And I, for example, one of them were this mechanic shop. And I don't know anything about cars or mechanics. I am really, really bad at that. But I know that the people who were there and their CEO and every employee was very passionate about it. So I would just like to go there and help them use their passion and then do good at the same time. So that would just be awesome if I could find a way to help, especially smaller and medium-sized businesses do this. Because everyone has their passion in, if it's chocolate or mechanics or recycling, helping them find this passion and getting it to be a sustainable passion as well, that would be really cool.
If they're passionate already, and if you ask people, nobody says, yes, we want to melt the ice caps and kill off all the polar bears. So if they're already passionate and they already understand sustainability, what's the hold up?
I think that there's always the cost of going sustainable. A lot of them will look at for example, a change in their products or in their processes and services that will make them look twice and be like, ooh, do we really want to spend that much money right now? And I think it's because they just look at the very old business model of just looking at profits. But you just have to understand that the whole world has to change. We don't have to look at profits anymore. Yeah, sure, if you can have a profit, that's nice. But if you're doing it while destroying the planet, I don't want anything to do with you. I want to be able to buy something that is not continuously damaging the planet. But of course, if they can make a profit at the same time, great. That's fine, but as a consumer, I don't really care about the profit part anyway. I just want the sustainable products.
As a person who's experienced with working with companies, do you think that they are ready and prepared to listen to shifts in business models, such as a shift to as a function as a service, like the interface carpets being the prime example?
I think that the business is actually more ready than most would think. I think the holdup is actually sometimes, that's just my personal opinion, in what the business students are taught. For example, at Copenhagen Business School, where I did my undergraduate, we were taught the very, very capitalistic version of just, you just have to make profits. Everything is about profits. Sustainability, sure, it's important, but profits is more important. And if that's the kind of business people we send out into the world and helping these businesses who actually wants to do some change and wants to be more sustainable, they're kind of just disencouraged from actually changing or maybe disencouraged from investing in the sustainable products. So I think the businesses are ready, but we need to start in the education system, because we, like the universities, are forming the next generation of CEOs and CFOs and managers in general. So they have to be the first part that changes.
I don't expect you to have the answer here, because it might take a miracle. But what would it take to change that? I mean, I'm thinking that people have known about the limitations of that classical economics approach for a long time. No one seriously believes in a rational man. The singular drive for profit maximization is, you know, been heavily criticized for a long time. Yet, if that's still what people are listening to, what's the hold up on that?
Yes, that's a very good question. I do believe that if people keep getting taught in the same material, that hold up of them actually changing or them just following the rules as they were taught is definitely one of them. I think it was Kate Raworth, I can't remember her last name correctly. She had this, we read this short article in one of our papers this semester where she said something like, the business students today are being taught in textbooks from the 1950s that are based off theory from the 1850s. And I just find that so funny, because Copenhagen Business School is really a classic example of that, especially the undergraduate programs. A lot of them were just very, very, I want to say old school, and like you were just looking at the standardized business models that were hype in the 1990s, and that everyone, like even my dad, when he did business studies, he was taught the same thing as I was. There's been no development in these things, even though the whole world is changing, everyone is changing, and everyone is also becoming more aware of sustainability and of climate change in general. And I just find it funny that the business students especially are still getting taught from textbooks from the 1950s based on theory from the 1850s.
So what is your plan for your master's thesis?
In my master's thesis, I am looking at the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, which is a new EU directive, and how it will impact Danish businesses. So what I'm looking at is how the Danish businesses are preparing for this directive. It's the directive is basically a directive that goes into the annual reports of businesses and tells them to do their carbon footprinting. They have to do every calculation for scope 1, 2, and 3 and have a whole bunch of different stuff. So I'm just looking at how businesses will prepare for this one, because I think the bigger businesses have to do it for their 2024 annual reports, which means that they are already now hiring people and trying to figure out how they're going to manage this going forward. So I'm just looking at the compliance, the preparedness, and also a little bit on their commitment to it.
Do you think you'll be able to identify those ones that are going to do it as a compliance or greenwash from those that are going to do it seriously?
I hope I would. I'm actually just started contacting different companies because I'm doing my ethics approval at the moment, and I started thinking about which companies to contact. And I want both having small businesses from when I was an accounting consultant. I do have a little bit of a network there, but also the bigger companies. And I'm really excited to see how many of especially the big companies that are just compliance or commitment, because usually when companies grow, it's harder to control every single process. So there can be a lot of mistakes happening here and there without people knowing. So I just want to see how they're actually preparing for this when they have to report everything and how they're going to manage it, especially.
I have some questions to end the show, and not very much time, so we're going to have to riddle. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Professionally or personally?
Anything you like, it's your show.
Well, I would say getting into my dream university in New Zealand is pretty big of accomplishment. That was definitely a big move of when I finished my undergraduate, figuring out a plan for how I'm going to actually fund this trip and figuring out what kind of grants I could apply for, both from private entities and funds and from the government and stuff. And then just traveling down here on my own. I'm literally on the other side of the planet and I'm here and I'm doing my school and I'm doing well and I have a job. And it's just that thing. I think that would be probably my biggest accomplishment.
We are very happy to have you here. What's your superpower?
My superpower is definitely I can chat in whatever situation there is. There is never a quiet moment when you're with me.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
No, I don't. I feel like I'm just an individual who will try to help the planet in every way that I can, because I feel like everyone should do this. But also being an academic, I want to be able to help not just on a individual plan for like small individuals, but also in a company level.
What motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
It's a beautiful world. Why shouldn't I want to get out and enjoy it even on a rainy day? You have so many different things you can do, either if it's outside or inside. Yeah, just enjoying life, enjoying the planet that we have, and it's a bummer if everyone is ruining it and future generations can't enjoy it. So
Fee talked about what made her positive about the future was being able to work with a positive future building community and building the community. What makes you positive?
That's a good question. I think it's because I do try to follow people. For example, I do try to follow people on social media that shares the good stories, because I feel like a lot of the newspapers, especially, they only focus on the negative and the negative impact of this and this and this. Of course, it's important to know the negative sides of it, because otherwise we wouldn't know which problem to actually start helping or start changing. But at the same time, being positive and having positive news will also help you feel that small accomplishment and be like, oh yes, we actually made it this far. It might just be on step 1 out of 100, but we're making progress. So I usually, especially in Denmark, there's this newspaper called World's Happiest News, and they post, of course, World's Happiest News, and that really helps me look at sustainability in a way that, like, this is possible. I can see it here. It's possible.
Did I ask you what your go-to definition of sustainability is? I don't think I did. What's your go-to definition of sustainability?
My go-to definition of sustainability. So, of course, you have the Brundtland report, which has been quite congested, actually, with not being specific about what they mean by needs and what they mean by future generations and stuff like this. For me, sustainability is just providing, for example, a product or a service in the best possible way, both for the people and the planet, and then hopefully, but actually ranking last, for the profits. So I would just define sustainability as providing those three things, but ranking them differently than most people do, with the profits first, at least. I would put it last.
That's the problem. Quite a lot of people, including on this podcast, I have to say, Moira, have talked about balance and it being just balancing the profit and the environment, as if the two are, you know, it's a zero-sum gain. It's got to be more of a nuanced relationship than that. So I'm happy to hear somebody talking about how that might play out. And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
I would say notice the small sustainability practices that you can do. For example, if it's recycling or taking public transport more than your car or just having a walk instead of taking the car everywhere. Do the small things because the small things matter. They always have and they always will.
Thank you for that. Moira.
Oh my gosh, you're speaking my language. That is exactly right. Do one thing, and when you've got that right, start doing another thing. Teach other people how to do the thing, and that's where change comes from. And Tia, I really enjoyed sharing that teaching space with you over this semester, and your contribution has been wonderful. You bring an international perspective and a way of looking at things that's different for our learners who, you know, are born and raised New Zealanders. Your experience, the way that you share your experience and the value that you add to our community is huge. Thank you very much for a really great interview with Fiona. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for that. We're going out, because of any excuse to go out, to Marcus Turner's Chocolate Song.
When you're tired and depressed or feeling lonely, when your checkbook's in the red and you are blue, when you've left the freezer open or your rubber band is broken or you've dropped the toilet paper down the loo, if you feel a sudden urge to wash the steak knives or to sniff at the exhaust pipe of your car or to farewell those you love and take a nap inside the oven, stop! Salvation's just a suck from where you are. When you're feeling down, the best way up is chocolate. It's the answer that will get you through the day. Let me get my teeth around something small and square and brown, and I'll masticate until I feel okay.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, who are brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. Moira Karatai introduced Tia Grigerson for her episode of Coming Up for Air. Tia brought us Fee from Kawakawa.
When you're feeling down, the best way up is chocolate. It's the answer that will get you through the day.
I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Katiwa.
And I'll masticate until I feel okay. When I see a bar of chocolate lying idle, it always seems to find its way inside my jaws. It's a shame to mess about, 'cause it tastes better in than out, and it's going to a very worthy cause. And although it won't endear me to my dentist, and my doctor will be worried for my health, and it's given me a skinful of enormous oily pimples, I'm still feeling very good about myself. When you're feeling down, the best way up is chocolate. It's the answer that will get you through the day. Let me get my teeth around something small and square and brown, and I'll masticate until I feel okay. Just remember, if it's chocolate, you can eat it. chocolate eggs and chocolate fish and chocolate chips. Chocolate bears and mice and frogs, chocolate cakes and moose and logs. Let a chocolate bomb explode across your lips. Some is crunchy and is filled with hokey pokey. Some is thrown about by cowboys and is white. There's a whole world out there waiting. Don't just sit there salivating. Pull your socks up, chocks away, and bite, bite, bite. When you're feeling down, the best way up is chocolate. It's the answer that will get you through the day. Let me get my teeth around something small and square and brown, and I'll masticate until I feel okay. A bad trip eating chocolate, and it's tastier than sex and much more fun. Keep your pills and dope and glue and your gin and whiskey too, 'cause there's no buzz like a chocolate buzz bar none. If you really, really love me, give me chocolate. Give me chocolate till it's coming out my ears. All I crave is just enough so I can indolently stuff myself for years and years and years and years and years. When you're feeling down, the best way up is chocolate. It's the answer that will get you through the day. Let me get my teeth around something small and square and brown, and I'll masticate until I feel okay. I'll masticate my miseries away.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.